Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Put Your Foot On It podcast with me, Jack Guthrie. We've got Lewis Blackmore today.
Hello, everyone.
We've got Harrison Lane.
Hello, everyone.
Luis Costa.
Hello, welcome. Well, sorry.
And Sam Clark.
Hello.
Today, we finally have the Prem back. So we're going to be talking about everything that's happened over the weekend, such as Huddersfield's relegation, but also the results. And we'll also be talking about the new IFAB rules, which we kind of covered earlier on. A couple of episodes back, I think it was, but they've kind of altered them this time. There's a few extra rules, I think, and just ironing out any minute details that we didn't really understand before. And then we'll have a small roundup of Varsity 2019 between Plymouth Uni and Marjohn Uni, mostly going to be run by Luis Costa. But let's get straight into it. So this weekend's results, guys, what are the biggest ones that we want to talk about today?
I'd probably say Liverpool-Tottenham. I mean, it's a big game at the top of the table with Liverpool beating Tottenham with a goal right near the end of the game. Just really goes to show Liverpool are pushing for the title, really.
Don't think they deserve the win, though, in my opinion.
No. I'd agree, and that's
But I mean, I know that's the luck of Premier League, but they haven't been performing as well as they could be at the moment, so it's a bit scary for them, I reckon, coming towards the end of the season.
That final-minute winner. It was a lucky game for Liverpool to win that.
It's a very unfortunate own goal.
Yeah,
really.
There's not a lot that who was it? It was
Alderweireld
could have done about it.
Lloris should have got hold of it.
There's now that picture going.
That really great picture of Lloris just
staring into the goal as it rolls in
into darkness.
And it's not the first one he's had this season, is it?
No,
really?
He's not
been. He's been one of their least reliable players, really.
Which is quite weird because he's always been one of. He's always been up in contention for like best keeper in the world, people have said, and stuff like that. But he has been quite dodgy this season.
In the World Cup final, he was dodgy.
Yeah.
That's where it all started, the World Cup final against Croatia.
I think so, yeah.
What's happened to this guy?
Yeah.
I think also another one that really stands out is the Chelsea result. We're talking about lucky. I think that's another one that's quite lucky.
Yeah.
Disgraceful officiating. Lucky.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's why VAR is going to get brought in for them exact reasons. Because that could cost Cardiff their place in the Premier League.
Warnock even said about if we had VAR.
They would have won that game. It wasn't just the Azpilicueta goal where he was 2 yards offside. It was also a Loftus-Cheek winning goal.
Yeah.
Free kick was taken in the wrong place quite a way away from where the free kick was given.
Yeah.
But do VAR pick up on that?
I don't think that's something that VAR picks up upon.
Is it clear and obvious? And
yeah.
I believe the offside, definitely.
The Rudiger card, I think that was a possibility that he could have got sent off at the end of the near the end of the game.
Yeah.
So that could be another thing.
It was just like that decision. I know we've said about it before, but in that Man U Wolves game in the FA Cup where Lindelof essentially got sent off and then they reduced it to the yellow. So
I think for this one, it would have been the other way around. Rudiger was last man, no attempt for the ball.
Yeah,
it was just quite a rash challenge for in that position, in that part of the game as well.
He didn't need to.
No. I mean, he's a good defender. He's quick. He could have stayed with him, but he just decided, you know what, I'm just going to foul him. But it was no need to make the foul in the way he did.
Yeah. Hopefully now, though, I mean, we actually get to see Andreas Christensen come into the Chelsea team.
Yeah.
I mean, as a Chelsea fan, it's something I've wanted for a while, so...
It would make complete sense, really. Definitely.
I have a feeling as well, coming into the end of the few games we've got left in the season, that Man City will probably win the league.
Yeah.
But they have got a few more games in Liverpool, but the way that Liverpool are performing at the moment, Man City will... they're going to storm through it.
Man City looks so much more comfortable. Was it Fulham they played over the weekend?
Yeah.
2-0.
They won 2-0. I was expecting like at least 9-10.
They could well have scored way more than
that. It could have been a cricket score.
They calmed down throughout the game.
Yeah.
That Manchester derby around 3-4 weeks time?
Yeah. 24th.
That's potentially the title decider.
Yeah.
If Man City get a result, and by result I mean at least a draw, they'll win it.
Yeah, because
I reckon so. Yeah,
because although I've been saying that Liverpool aren't playing too well, they've got to play Chelsea, and Chelsea are playing awful as well. So that could be a game where Liverpool can easily win it.
Liverpool played their hardest game in the running.
Yeah,
that's Tottenham out of the way now. Relatively, other than Chelsea, Liverpool have an easy run into the league now. But with Man City's game in hand, that's going to kind of really help for them, just push them ahead again.
Because what, Liverpool are 2 points ahead now, is it? So yeah, the game in hand is going to be crucial.
It's going to be, I think the league's going to go down to a 1 point deficit, and if not, it'll be one on goal difference. And
it's going to be close, let's put it that way.
There's nothing Liverpool can do if Man City win all the rest of the games, so Liverpool just have to focus on winning, don't they?
Yeah. As long as Liverpool don't lose, Liverpool can still put out the bag, but it's just going to be very, very hard for Liverpool to do it now, I believe.
Whereas, that's what I mean, it's not really in Liverpool's place to do it. It's Man City having to...
It's that if Man City majorly cock up, that's the only way that
Liverpool can win.
Yeah, Liverpool will win.
Man City... The only upside to Man City is they have the squad depth, whereas Liverpool don't. So Man City know if they lose. I mean, I believe Aguero hobbled off at the weekend.
But they've got Jesus, so
he's getting rested for the Cardiff game, I think, because of just them reasons with the games coming up. So,
but I think another thing that might hinder Manchester City is the fact that they're still on for a quadruple.
They're
still in the Champions League and the FA Cup.
Yeah,
I think. Talking about their squad depth, Pep has said that
Pep wants to win everything, so
I'm not surprised.
Rotation's going to be key.
Because depth in terms of players, but depth in terms of quality players, they shit all over Liverpool, don't they?
Yeah. Really?
They've got a starting 11. They've got about three different starting 11s they could play.
And that are all of a really high quality as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And players that can interchange positions if they need.
Any of their attackers can play anywhere along the front three.
Yeah. Imagine essentially, Zinchenko was playing up front where he was originally started.
Zinchenko's been playing quality for them in replacement of Ben Mendy and stuff.
He did have some dodgy spells, but
You do when you've not got the experience, so it's not too bad, really.
And replacing Mendy is a big ask, because Mendy is a really good player. It's a shame he hasn't been able to properly show it yet in the first
season was quality.
Yeah,
and he's starting this season with 4 or 5 assists in 6 games.
I know, he's looking to be one of probably the best left-backs in the Prem.
He is up there. It's between him and Robertson.
I still think Robertson takes it.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, obviously I'm biased.
Liverpool fan.
I'm obviously very biased in that sentiment.
To be fair, Robertson has been unbelievable this season. Not in terms of just his defence.
But his assists.
It's been unbelievable what he and...
Alexander-Arnold
have done.
Yeah.
Amazing.
We're talking about squad depth and everything. Liverpool have done well, seeing that they've had... At one point in the season, only one centre-back fit. I mean, Van Dijk does make 3 people in one, but still, with playing different players at centre-back, they've showed they can do it well, Liverpool.
I think we mentioned previous episode that when Fabinho stepped in at centre-back...
He was brilliant.
And it was in Champions League and stuff, and he pulled it out the bag. So it shows what trust Klopp has in his players. So he still believes. They obviously all believe, but I just think... Man City just have that extra little edge above them coming into it.
I think also...
Especially with the game in hand.
Yeah, I think also we've got to talk about the top four because, you know, there's a couple of teams well in contention. You know, you've got both Man U and Chelsea.
Chelsea, Arsenal, Spurs.
What is it, like 1 or 2 points, isn't it, between...
Something like
3
that.
Points between 6th and 3rd. So Chelsea on 60, Arsenal on 63, with Tottenham and Man United in the middle 61. There's no way any teams below them will catch. I mean, seventh place is 16 points behind 6th. So there is clear that it's going to be between Chelsea, United, and Tottenham and Arsenal.
Does Chelsea have a game in hand on Tottenham?
No,
same. Everyone's played 31 except Liverpool have played 32.
Right, okay, that's cool.
Liverpool played 30. Sorry, what was that?
32.
No, they played 32.
It said 30, yeah.
Because Man City got a game behind.
Yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, I think in terms of form, Arsenal and Man United were probably my favourites to snatch it. But obviously, like me and Jack are, we're Chelsea fans. Yeah, we'd like Chelsea to get there.
But with our performances.
Yeah, especially when you look at Tottenham's recent form and it's just
they haven't won
dire.
In 5 games.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
They could have easily taken the third spot.
Well, I remember.
I think it's the first time in Pochettino's reign as manager that he's not won in a space of 5 games.
Yeah, it literally is. Yeah.
I know it sounds silly to say, but literally 5 games ago, they were still in contention for being able to
Pochettino
leapfrog.
Was saying stuff like, we still have a chance that we could somehow nick it.
Yeah.
But that would have taken a miracle.
But now,
in my opinion, those 5 games they haven't won. Five games as 15 points. 15 points would put them 3 points behind Man City.
Yeah.
Yeah,
in my opinion, Spurs need to get knocked out of the Champions League. and then
yeah, I think that's not going to help them at all, especially considering all the injury problems that they've had over the past couple of months.
Because if you look over the Christmas period, when everyone, well, for 2 days only, everyone was like, oh, Spurs, dark horses to win the Premier League,
yeah,
1 point behind Liverpool or wherever it was. That was during no Champions League, no FA Cup, no League Cup. They were flying. And as soon as the Champions League came back, it's like...
Yeah.
Everyone started getting injured.
When they have no Harry Kane, they can only rely on Son. But when you, in January, when they had no Son and no Kane, having to play Llorente up front isn't the way Spurs play.
Yeah, but have you noticed how Kane's come back in his first game back? He has been scoring, but they've been losing. So they can't. Yeah. It shows they can't just rely on him as anyway.
I think it doesn't help that their two key centre-backs in Alderweireld and Vertonghen are now getting in and around the 30-year-old mark.
Yeah.
Whereas Alderweireld, probably a couple of seasons ago, would have been the best outstanding centre-back in the Premier League. He's just not living up to it anymore.
No.
And the fact that they haven't bought anyone since, what, it's been three transfer windows,
yeah,
is it now?
January last year was the last time they bought someone.
Look,
that's very telling.
They've clearly now got problems that they haven't resolved.
They're not bringing anyone younger up. I believe Oliver Skip has had a couple goes this season, but I can't think of any defenders that have been given chances this year.
Well, and
the only one I can think of is Kyle Walker-Peters, but that's been...
He's been in around a while.
Trippier's been injured and he's been out of form.
Yeah, massively.
And Pochettino doesn't like to rely on Aurier, so it just proves that he needs to bring in, I think, one player in a lot of positions to add on, especially striker. They've brought in Vincent Janssen for quite a big amount of money, and I mean, the guy's done nothing.
He's still a Spurs player, by the way.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
He got treated awful, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, but he was really, really bad. He was only scoring in, like, the League Cup.
I remember when Tottenham signed Soldado, whatever his name was,
and he
scored quite a few goals, and they're all penalties. And then he got sold.
Yeah.
That was a good little experience, isn't it?
But in my opinion, Spurs are not big enough to like be winning titles every season. Like,
definitely
not.
The amount of pressure people put into Spurs is like, no, this club is made to look... If they win that old League Cup, FA Cup, yeah, great. But like,
they're not...
nowadays, every club wants to be a big club, get into Champions League.
They haven't spent the money that a big club, like Manchester City, for example, has spent quite a lot of money getting the players that they need or they want to build their squad depth. They've gone out, they've known what they've wanted, and they've gone it. Like, similar to Bayern Munich, who've just signed Theo Hernandez for like 80 million euros, I think it is.
Joke amount of money.
But that's because they know they've got two centre-backs that aren't getting young and aren't going to be playing for Germany anymore, so they need to start getting younger players in.
Yeah.
They're doing it right.
Pardon?
Boateng's getting sold.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that as well. He's there's plenty of suitors for those sort of players. Even, like, anyone in the top four or any of the top five leagues could take a centre-back like him any day.
I think the issue for Tottenham is their fans, because they have been getting to sort of the later stages of the Champions League, especially this season, the fans are starting to believe they actually can win it, but they need to be realistic and think, look at the teams we've got to play against. They've been written off already against Man City, and that's a team that we're playing
when
the league with.
When you still have teams like Man City, Barcelona, Juventus, who are all having incredible seasons this year.
Juventus on the side of a draw as well.
Like, exactly. Yeah. When you see that those are three potential teams that Spurs could face, you just think, there's no chance. There is absolutely
the standard
no chance.
Between Spurs and any of the top teams in Europe is that any team is a class above Spurs. Even as your Spurs are fourth in the Premier League, but fourth in the Premier League is nothing now.
No,
you're either first or second, and then you're out of the title
There's
race.
There's hardly a distinction between fourth and sixth, is there really?
Not anymore. No. It used to literally be the top four, and then whoever was fifth and sixth, they're okay.
And then
they're not up there.
Seventh was like
they
maybe
can fight for Europa. It's fine.
Well, no, obviously the wage bill. New stadium, they need the Champions League because they need the money.
Yeah,
Europa League, it pays a third of what the Champions League.
If the form carries on as the way it is, I don't see Spurs getting Europe.
Yeah,
with Chelsea and Mike, I don't. Yeah, I think
they'll get Europa League.
They'll get Europa League.
No, there's the clause, isn't there?
Automatically,
if Arsenal or Chelsea go on and win the Europa League and Tottenham don't finish into the top five, I believe the space gets dropped down, so Tottenham may not get Europe. Like, when this happened a couple of years ago, when Tottenham got fourth but didn't get into the Champions League.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that rule's changed now.
Is it changed now, is it?
I think so.
But then, I know if Chelsea or Arsenal win the Europa League, they got automatic Champions League.
Yeah.
I think it
and then
is.
Ah, okay.
It's yeah. up to five.
So I think they'll get five. I think they'll get Europa League.
But then if Man City win the FA Cup.
If they're in that bracket.
Also, while we're mentioning Tottenham, what about their new stadium name? The Coca-Cola Arena?
Coca-Cola Arena.
What do we think of that?
It's got to be money.
Oh, no, it definitely is.
Tottenham fans...
I reckon they really like Coke.
Yeah, I think that's a shout.
I was looking on Twitter earlier and I was on the Tottenham fan page and they're not impressed. They really, really wanted it to be called White Hart Lane. And I don't see why not. I mean, it's built around the same stadium. So it just makes sense being in the same location to have the same name.
Is it official, though?
It's officially going to be coming because it's not only going to be used by Spurs.
I think it's being used by Saracens as
well.
And then
NFL games.
Oh yeah,
I believe Jacksonville Jaguars from the NFL will be using that instead of Wembley from
now
on.
Next season or
something
like that.
Yeah, well, that's only twice a year.
But still, like, I guess the income's going to be massive for Tottenham with Coca-Cola being the sponsor. Who are they're one of the biggest non-tech sponsors in the world.
Get more Americans coming over.
Yeah, I think it. With that sort of stadium name, it has gone down the sort of American route because I'm a massive NBA fan. You know, all the arenas are named after a company. You've got American Airlines Arena, American Airlines Center, and Oracle Arena. But I think it's just trying to commercialize football almost too much. It's
becoming too much of a business, isn't it? And like,
it is.
Especially the older fans, the older age people,
they're not going to like it. It's like when they wanted to change St. James's Park to the Sports Direct Arena or something like that.
Yeah.
That's branding.
The Geordies did not like that.
Oh, no. But to be fair, they've really had strong words against Mike Ashley even before that.
Yeah, I mean, he's true. If we talk about Mike Ashley, he's a joke of a chairman or an owner, whatever he is, he's an
absolute joke.
I think
he's changed a bit slightly since January.
Yeah. When he got Almiron,
willing to spend a bit more money
because
he
hasn't sold the club.
Yeah. Basically, yeah.
He can't. No one's going to buy it off him. The price is too high for a team that
aren't succeeding.
They're 14th in the Premier League. No one's going to come in and buy a team like that for however much money he wants for
them. They're not a bad squad, though, so I think if he had belief,
they
could be fine. But he just doesn't seem to have this backing of the actual, just the club in general.
And the fans, especially.
Yeah. He's fallen out of favour by trying to do stupid buys, really. That's all it's come down to.
But moving further down from saying that Newcastle are close to being relegated.
Huddersfield are now officially the... didn't they join the
joint
record?
Joint with Derby.
For the quickest time, or quickest amount of games to be relegated from the Premier League.
Which is really unfortunate because I think Huddersfield have a good squad. They had a really, really good manager before.
Bless the Terriers.
I think their manager before, was it David Wagner?
Yeah, David Wagner. Yeah.
He was a brilliant manager, David Wagner. Like,
he was a brilliant manager, to be fair, but they just can't score.
No.
Yeah.
They could not pay to score a goal.
One of their strikers, since they've been in the Premier League, had scored one goal, and that was this season. Am I right in saying Jurgen Lacadia?
I think so.
Oh, it might be.
Yeah.
Well, no, he's Brighton.
Oh, is he Brighton?
Oh, no, he's Brighton.
There is a striker. I can't think of his name.
He's called...
Steve Mounier?
Yeah, that's it. Steve Mounier.
There you go. I got mixed up. But yeah, Steve Mounier scored hardly any goals under David Wagner. It just didn't make sense that it was all coming from behind. There's players in that squad, like you've got Aaron Moy.
Who's a brilliant player.
He deserves... He won't stay.
No, I don't know about that.
He's definitely going to leave.
But he's one of the best Australian players, really.
Yeah,
isn't he?
I remember that goal at the start of the season. That can't really describe it now, but...
it was one of them long-distance ones, wasn't it?
Yeah,
yeah.
One of those typical long-distance ones you get from midfielders of his
caliber. Yeah, but that's the thing. They just shows how much they haven't scored. If that's like just a midfielder scoring one goal is a standout thing in the season.
If they're having to rely on players scoring long-range efforts, you know you're in a bad place.
Yeah.
Especially in the Premier League, where you've got teams like City that will just run round you with complete ease and have about 90% possession.
Because it shows that Cardiff haven't been relegated yet, but they've actually been scoring
a few goals recently.
They've been all right. At the start of the season, I think they were a bit iffy. They didn't really score many, but they've started to score a few more now because they've beaten the likes of Wolves and stuff.
Just scoring like scrappy goals from corners. Like I know Sol Bamba's done it however many times this season.
It's what it takes, though, isn't it, to stay up? You just need that bit of luck.
And in July last year, I remember telling my dad, Cardiff are going to be relegated in February. Because their squad did not look like a Premier League squad.
Yeah, I remember Torquay had a friendly against them in pre-season. And honestly, I think it was we drew with them in pre-season. And that's Torquay, that are five leagues below them.
Cardiff are well above expectations this season.
Definitely.
Yeah. Even if they get relegated in 17th place, that is... Oh, no, sorry, 18th place. That is above expectations for Cardiff. I think to be.
It is, yeah.
I think as well, though...
They look to be the weaker of the teams that came up. And Fulham, they've just
capitulated. That's exactly what I was about to mention.
Oh, Fulham's again, money. Fulham spent all that money.
I think the issue was with them, like Cardiff and Fulham... Obviously, Wolves have had a bit of a different season, but them other two that have been promoted from the Championship, it's taken them too long to gain form and gain a bit of an understanding about how they're going to play this season. Because Fulham have been through a couple of managers already, and they've actually started to play a bit of a system now, but because it's too late in the season, teams are still beating them.
Well, talking of Fulham, they will get relegated this weekend if Burnley, Southampton and Brighton win.
I mean, Brighton has FA Cup,
isn't it? Is it FA Cup this weekend?
Yeah.
I know there's games in midweek.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, midweek. You
there's mean. A midweek game. I think Chelsea play Brighton.
So what it is Fulham are on 17 points and they can only possibly get another 18. So they would get to 35
Watford tonight
against Watford. So I also think that if Watford win and other teams, as in Brighton, Cardiff, as the teams above them get 1 point, Fulham will get relegated because they can only possibly get a maximum of 35 points.
Well,
now.
Tomorrow, Man City are playing Cardiff. So
yeah,
I think
go on,
Cardiff.
Brighton have got Chelsea.
You never know. And Warnock did say he was going to play what his under 23 side. You never know.
You never know. Yeah, they could pull it out of the
bag. Can you believe 2 years ago, Joe Michael Sarri was being scouted by
Barcelona,
Man City,
PSG. To be fair, he did very well when he was at Nice and was looking to be a very promising midfielder. But
I mean, he got given the chance to go to Man United and Liverpool and turned it down to go to Fulham because he thought that he could help Fulham.
Well, I think I think in terms of modern day players, that's quite a good thing.
That's quite a good.
He won't stay if they go to the Champions League.
No, of course not.
I think he knew he wanted first team football.
But exactly,
and the challenge.
Showing that mentality will make people want to sign him when they do drop to the Championship. But he has been the player that was sort of assisting the goals that they were scoring.
He scored a great goal as well. I seem to remember from distance.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, nice long range goal.
I think the fact that they bought so many different players from so many different styles. Because with Wolves, they played the exact same style of football that they played last season, which was defend, 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 counter-attack with everything you've got and score. But the fact that Fulham didn't kind of stick to that and have gone and bought all these random players, it seems.
They didn't even go nation. Like, Wolves have links with Portugal. That's why a majority of their players are Portuguese, which is a really good way to work your way around a team and get your English players in there so you have your homegrown players to the match you're allowed. With Fulham, buying Ryan Babel, Andre Schürrle, Mitrovic, Seri, all four different nationalities, and that's the four biggest players they got. It's not right to have so
to
many different nationalities in a team.
They're their standout players that have actually sort of been...
Mitrovic has been an absolute standout, and I reckon he'll go to another Prem team.
Has to.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you never know. He might go back to Newcastle again. I don't see it not happening if Newcastle...
But Newcastle want to keep Rondon, don't they? Not Mitrovic.
Yeah, I reckon they're going to keep Rondon.
They're quite
instead,
similar players,
he's
I'd
been
say.
In form.
Mitrovic needs to go to a better Premier League side or even go abroad because he is a good enough striker to play for a team... In the French league, say, I mean, not PSG, anyone below that, he's that good enough level. He's too good for Fulham.
Yeah, but Lyon have a striker. Monaco, they got their young and aging squad. It's a mixture
of them.
And
they're bottom area of the table as well.
Bottom 10 of the table. You've got Nice, mid-table. Marseille just signed Balotelli as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard.
It's running out of options, isn't there, really?
Absolutely.
So, moving on to the IFAB rules. Now, we covered this in a previous podcast, but it's just been released now that there are going to be 6 rules coming into the Premier League next season. Some of them have been altered slightly, like I think the handball one, for example, which is one of them, has been made much more clear. But if we just go through them, So the first one, if a free kick wall has more than three players in it, no attacker can be within 1 metre of the wall. Goal kicks no longer need to leave the 18-yard box. Goalkeepers can't stand completely behind the line for penalties. If a player is about to be booked and the opposing team take a quick free kick, then the referee can come back from the play and book the offender. Drop balls will no longer happen in football. The ball will just go back to the last team in possession. And then there's been loads of different changes with the handball rule, mostly about handballs involved in the build-up towards goals and anything above the head. So what do we make now of the rules that they've kind of been changed a little bit?
I think the weirdest rule is both to do with the goalkeepers. So goalkeepers can't stand completely behind the line for penalties and they can't stand in front of the line. So, but from what I've always been taught as a kid is that a goalkeeper has to stand on his line. Yeah. It's always been taught, so I don't understand this rule being brought in. I've always thought it was a rule anyway.
Yeah,
since under 8s they teach you that.
That's what I thought. So what is everyone's thoughts on that rule then?
Because they feel the need to point it out even further, which really, do they really need to do that?
If you can't go over it, if you can't go under it, stay on it.
Well, that's it. Isn't
but the thing is, keepers taking a step off the line isn't something that they really enforce. I don't think I've ever seen a keeper coming forward on a penalty off his line ever be enforced.
Well, no. this is what I'm thinking then. So with this rule being brought in, it's saying they can't stand behind the line. That's not giving them an advantage. That's giving them a disadvantage. They're further away from the ball.
Does this now mean they're going to start enforcing keepers to be on their line if they can't be... If they've noticed that they can't stand behind it, surely they've now got to enforce that they can't stand in front of it as
they
well.
They need to.
I'd say that's quite a difficult one, though, really, to enforce, because they would just stop. It would, prevent penalties from being taken quickly.
Well, maybe the linesmen are going to get told to focus on that more whilst the ref just focuses on the run-up.
You think so?
Which what I always thought it should be. I know the linesman has to stand in line with the players due to the fact now because we've got goal line technology in the Premier League.
Yeah.
So it's always to watch for the whole offside thing.
Are the 6 officials now going to finally have a job to do?
Well, it's short, that's what they're there for. There's no other reason they're there.
In my opinion, the rule they need to really check is a 6-second rule.
Because yeah, that is a keepers joke. Never stick to
that's
6 seconds.
Never been a, isn't it? It is a rule, but it's always been one of those where
it's
it never
been
happens
properly. Basically.
Another one of those ones that I know it's a rule, but I've never seen it enforced. Or if it has been enforced, it's because it's been time wasting. They've held it for a minute.
There's loads of little ones like that. It's just ridiculous.
Like
isn't
only
it?
Like the most extreme cases.
Shocking.
And the other goalkeeper one we've just mentioned is the goal kicks need to leave the 18-yard box. Well, that needs to be explained a bit more.
I think it's because of the fact that football's now changing where the keepers now want to play out rather than just lump it upfield.
So what my argument with this is then is they're allowed to take the goal kick and it doesn't have to leave the box, but are the attackers allowed to stand in the 18-yard box?
No, I don't reckon they will.
So I think it's still stupid because does that mean as soon as the ball is played or...?
It'll be as soon as the keeper touches the ball, I reckon, because even if they slip or, play a hospital pass, then the attacking can just run onto it.
It's probably in terms to keep the shape of the game, isn't it?
But
they
also
won't be allowed to go into the box.
At least give the team with the ball a chance of getting it out without...
Because it helps a quick play.
If anything, it helps both teams because even if you're not allowed to go into the box whilst they're about to kick it, because obviously that would just be stupid, but if you're allowed to, as soon as they kick it, you're allowed to go in and get them inside their box. They're close to their goal, so if you put the pressure on them straight away, they can make a mistake.
Yeah,
so.
It's up to the other team to try and sort of fight against it. You know?
It could also be something like with the quick free kick rule, just as long as the ball's still, just play it to whoever. I think if it's definitely a goal kick and, you want to get players up the pitch as quick as possible, just getting the ball on the floor and passing it to a defender who may still be in the box.
I think it's a real benefit.
I think it's good, especially because recently teams have been getting pulled up on the ball not going out of the box and it just stops it for no reason.
Yeah.
What's there avoiding it from happening? So I think
it's just
a good.
It's just part of the modern game.
Yeah.
I think that's the main reason. It's because football's changed now with defensive tactics that players now want to play it out from the back rather than launch it forward. And I think they've just included this rule to kind of help that, I guess.
Yeah.
So the other rule that we've mentioned is if a player is about to be booked and the opposing team take a quick free kick, the referee can go back and issue the booking in the next stoppage, which I thought was already in because that's advantage, right?
That's basically playing the advantage rule, it seems. I don't understand why they've had to state that now as a rule where a ref can go back.
Unless they're meaning that if a serious challenge is made, a quick free kick can be taken and it can go back and... Because maybe it's not just yellow cards, maybe it's red cards as well.
I reckon if it's a red card challenge, play has to be stopped because, especially if it's one where it's endangering the player.
It's just favouring the attacking team, isn't it, really?
I reckon so.
It needs to be contemporaneous.
I think a couple of these are just to prevent the game from stopping.
Yeah, it's going to be something
that's... It's just they're trying to make the game more free-flowing.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I'm not going to argue that. Football will be quite a lot more fun to watch, but...
To be fair, that does just sound a lot like the advantage rule.
Maybe they need to go over the advantage rule again?
Maybe. It might be a case if they just have to iron out the advantage rule rather than bring in a whole new, what seems like, second advantage rule.
So, the big rule that's been brought in, which has been very detailed, is the law on handball and accidental handball. So the first one we've got is if a goal is scored after touching an attacking player's arm or hand. So... To me, that's always been a rule.
Handball.
Brilliant. It hasn't always been sought after. So a big example is Thierry Henry when he kept the ball in play with his hand against Ireland and then France went and scored.
No, I remember that.
I mean, so this rule is only to be looked at by VAR. Surely.
It's probably going to be something that will be enforced by VAR.
It has to be, because otherwise the referees aren't going to see it. Because they've now
stated it, so the referees are now able to make a clear decision. If it definitely hits his hand, it's handball, whether you like it or not.
I reckon it's still going to cause a lot of controversy.
Definitely.
I mean, it's good that they're trying to define it a bit more, but it's still just going to cause so much trouble.
It's
going to be
one.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You cannot... take controversy away from football.
No, that's never possible.
Like, they can try as much as they want with VAR, this and that, they'll never be able to do it.
They claim clear and obvious decisions, and sometimes that's just not in football, is it really?
No.
But sometimes it's down to opinion as well. So if all of us see something that happens in the game and two of us think it's handball, the other three might think it's not. So it's always it has to be fully down to the referee when it comes to making a final decision. Even if VAR get involved. Yeah.
And then you've just got the other decision with the drop balls
being
eradicated completely. Which I think is a good thing because it's a bit of an archaic method.
It's pointless, isn't it?
It is, really, especially in the modern game.
Drop balls only really stop the game and they never really did it. If ever there was like a coming together where both players have gotten injured, they've just passed it to whoever the closest keeper is. It always seems to have been. But getting completely rid of it and just giving the ball back to the team in possession, I think
it's a good rule. I'm glad they've done it, to be honest.
There's been times before
the game's been stopped where it could have been played on, so it should go back to the attacking team.
And the drop ball rule's always been weird anyway, because when teams have scored from... Until that rule was brought in, you could score from a drop ball before.
Yeah.
When you're supposed to pass it back to the keeper. I think I saw it once at Yeovil. They lobbed the opposing team's goalkeeper. So it can be a thing... But it's good that it has been changed.
That was quite funny to watch. It's quite funny to watch that. That was some drop goals.
It's nice to see, really. It's good though. This has been brought in that the attacking team do get the ball back, or the team that had the ball at the time.
Yeah, and just coming back to the handball rule changes, and they now changed it to whatever contact the ball makes with your hand above your head is now going to be a handball, and I think that's something that. Well, ideally would have been brought back in the 1980s when Maradona was playing, but just having clarity about that rule now, that doesn't matter whether it's ball to hand or hand to ball, whatever it is.
No matter what, that
if
is
the ball
being
touches the
back.
Hand, it's now handball, and the fact that we've now got that clarity is good.
My only issue with that is, though, what about if during the game, like Virgil van Dijk sorting like his ponytail out or something, he's got his hand behind his head, then there's like a throw-in and someone throws it against his hand. Well, is that a free kick or a penalty?
That's very specific.
That is very specific. I've never seen that happen. I would love to see
it. I would love to see it happen.
I was more worried about his hair than the handball.
Other players with ponytails are available.
That's his problem for doing his hair.
Yeah, fair enough, yeah.
Got your hair,
isn't it? But no, I guess under IFAB's rules, That's not allowed. Stop messing with your hair, mate.
You should tell them that. See what they say.
I might put it up when I next go to one of their meetings.
You should. IFAB expert. Yeah.
So again, IFAB bringing in new rules. It's interesting, really.
Got the free kick one as well. The free kick wall. That's been sort of made a little bit more clearer than what they put out.
So
last
it's like
time.
It's like the defensive team can make a decision whether they want an attacker in it, basically. So if you have three people there, then you can't have an attacker in the ball. But then if there's four, then you can. So they make a decision basically whether they want someone else in the ball with them.
Defense sort of make a decision in a way before, because they obviously the goalkeeper's like, right, can I have that many people in the ball? So maybe it just decides on that. It's a bit of a weird one though.
It's
I think, just
so they can just say about the attackers being in the wall.
Also, 1 meter on a football pitch isn't very much.
No.
So if you're 1 meter away from the wall...
From the wall, you could still make a big impact.
But if once a ball is kicked and you can join the wall...
Maybe it's to prevent interference in the wall to maybe what could be a free kick offence, so the ref doesn't have to necessarily monitor that
involved.
Or something.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just to prevent that.
And does it now mean the ref has to put a massive great circle around the wall? Does he need more shaving foam?
Oh, yeah, I remember that in the previous episode, yeah.
Bigger bottle or more bottles? It's a decision.
Just a whole utility belt of them.
I mean, we shouldn't advertise, but he should probably get sponsored by Gillette.
Yeah, he probably should.
Okay, so that is that with the IFAB rules. We will now move over to Costa so that he can discuss varsity.
Oh. Luis!
He's awake now.
Well, we may have lost varsity overall, 25-11, where...
We are Marjon, by the way.
We are Marjon, yeah.
And the scum are Plymouth Uni.
Marjon, are we?
We're only the first rugby team and the first basketball team were the only first teams to win a game. Which was quite surprising as the lacrosse lost in the last 3 seconds.
Did they?
I covered that game and it was really hard to watch. It was the last swing of the game from Plymouth Uni was... the goal that won them the game. It would have been a draw.
That's madness.
Because I was watching the basketball and, well, Marjon were 19 points ahead going into the fourth quarter. And then all of a sudden, it's 5 points ahead going into... But then they brought on...
Squeaky bum time.
Oh, God, yeah. But Marjon have 3 Plymouth Raiders players, actual professional basketball players, which they brought on for the final 2 minutes and just rinsed them.
So that's a big fail for you, Harrison, and for you, Jack, for not watching my game.
And Lewis and I did.
Yeah,
we were there. Yeah.
Hey, loyal supporters.
I was there for the last 10 minutes.
Well, then
I was having food.
That's not a get out of jail free card, I'm afraid.
I must admit, Lewis, you did make varsity much more interesting with your sideline antiques.
And
antiques.
Yeah, he had a really old shirt on. Antiques.
Trying to sell some cupboards.
And my shit house read that game was unreal as well, running on the pitch.
Yeah, I think I saw that.
Hold on, stop it.
Please enlighten me with this, Costa.
Sorry?
What's this? But you running on?
A fight broke out.
Oh, yeah.
Just before the final whistle, I run on the pitch, as you do.
Big man, Luis.
And then the ref blows the full time whistle as I was halfway
during the fight.
During the fight, and the liner runs. So he starts chasing me. It's like, don't join the fight. Don't join. It's like, I'm going to celebrate, man. Like, I want varsity.
I don't condone violence. I want to celebrate.
But yeah, it's a.
So that's a massive shout out though to the football club at Marjon for winning. For the men's, they won 2. And then drew one, and then I know they lost a big game at Home Park, the home of Plymouth Argyle.
It was an agonising game to watch and commentate on.
Yeah, me and Jack both commentating on that game, and
we got drowned in by the Plymouth Uni fans. Which,
yeah,
I mean we
very disgusting, abusive fans. I would say,
yeah, coming from you.
There's about 25 of us from the second team and third team trying to do our best, push the team, but. There was too many of them.
The most agonising one, though, was definitely the women's first.
Oh, absolutely.
Last 2 goals in the final 10 minutes.
To be 4-2 up and to draw 4-4 and then lose on pens is a bit upsetting, isn't it?
I know.
Commentating that game, me and Sam, it was very hard to commentate it.
And still try and remain, professional.
Yeah,
about
because
it,
I just thought that Marjon played amazing. It was really hard to watch them lose, especially in that way.
They were dominant in that game. They were dominant. They looked better. They They held the ball better and they created more chances. And also, their striker, Lucy Atkinson, getting a hat-trick and what? Is it 10 goals in two games?
Yeah.
Something stupid like that. But and then going on and missing the penalty. And we just thought... Oh,
why now?
Why now? But no, those final two goals in the last 10 minutes...
It's painful.
The keeper dropping the ball in the goal was... It should never have happened. But that final goal was a complete fluke.
Yeah, 100%.
Going over the keeper and then only being able to tip it onto bar and in was...
Louise, how did it feel actually taking part in varsity?
Well, the whole thing... No.
I think that was a serious question.
That's the whole thing.
It is quite serious. Like, the whole thing, well, for me, football club, it was unreal.
Because as a team, I suppose it's good to sort of take part
in
it.
The amount of people that would buy the pitch watching was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was.
It was... It felt great, like, just get there watching the bees. And then when the bees went too obvious,
it was great.
And then, but then from the moment you get into the changing room, you know it's something big.
Yeah.
It's bigger than a cup final, I would say.
Because being your first varsity as well.
Yeah, being a fresher, you just get your match program there, your personalised towel, your kit with your name and number at the back as well. It's unreal, and then
it must have been an amazing experience. You played your part as well as you could have, and it was probably just the experience above everything else.
And then at home park, obviously, they told us shirt and tie attire. So shirt and tie attire, as much as I hate it.
I mean, you looked fresh. It's all good.
I did, yeah. But it's great to be part of varsity. And last night at the rugby as well, which Marjan won, it was. It felt so good.
Yeah, that was the best result,
I mean,
think.
Even though it didn't end all well for us being Marjan students, the spectacle overall was just brilliant.
I mean, I know sometimes it gets a bit aggy like during the games, but like it is just a load of fun with a little bit of light-hearted banter towards it, just to have a good sporting sort of situation. So I thought it was all right.
I think it's just great to see a lot of sport on show like that. You know,
100%.
A lot of competitive
sport using actual venues such as Home Park. And
it's a testament to the local Brickfields. Sporting, you know, clubs and
massive shout out though to Home Park
and Brickfields
to host university games when they have games themselves on those pitches. And this really nice clubs.
I suppose to give us journalist students opportunities to go and sort of like just do a little bit of broadcasting on it as well, just to get a bit of experience as well. I think it's quite a good thing to have around as well.
Yeah.
And I would like to add one more thing about the men's game, which it was heartbreaking to watch, to be honest. Like seeing players like Reece Lusmore getting injured in the warm up, not even playing the game in his last varsity. Prinny. A load of third years as well. It's just, it was painful. And we had the VIP room in Prism for after the game, and you stand there. It's like, it felt like it was such a cold, such a dull atmosphere.
Yeah,
because they've been unbeaten all year, and now they come and lose the biggest game of the season. Mm-hmm. Given that Prinny and all these third years are leaving this year as well. You sit there and understand, it was just like...
Shows how much it means to everyone, doesn't it?
It was painful. It was painful to be there, but there's always next year, you know?
Yeah.
Hopefully I'll be on the sideline, even on the bench. I'll take the bench.
And on that light-hearted note, I think we'll end the podcast there. So
I've got a tear in my eye, Jack.
Sorry, boys.
Thank you all very much for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.